All right, everyone, welcome back to episode 6 of Snack Time with Mike and Ant. I'm one of your hosts, Ant Testator, writer for Gathering Magic and also a names and flavor text writer for Wizards of the Coast. And with me is Mike Linneman.
I also used to write flavor text and names, though I sucked at it, I'll admit. I'm one of the writers for Gathering Magic. Also on Wednesdays, the flavorful day, I write on art, and I used to be an art director for a stint. And we're here to talk about the best part about Magic, the taste, that flavor.
So, Mike, what are you doing now? I know, and this is tape two because I accidentally forgot to hit record, and Mike was telling us about his new job.
Oh, yeah, I have a new job. I'm working at the University of Minnesota Foundation, which, as we call it in Minnesota, it's the U, which is similar to Michigan with the U of M, but not DU, which is Miami, and it is DUH, DU, instead of the U. So there you go. Start that new job in early February, wearing maroon and gold all the time. The Fighting Golden Gophers. Gotta love it.
Nice. All right. Well, today, Mike,
what do we got?
Are talking about flavor text today, and I'm really, really excited.
Ooh, I like that.
So that's our topic, and I'm jumping right in. We're just going to do flavor gems right now. The gem I got for us today is Duskmantle House of Shadow. It was printed in Ravnica block, the original, going
1.
Back
0.
To the original 1.0 Ravnica. This is a Dimir card, and the flavor of the card is it's a land, and it's supposed to be the Dimir's kind of like center where they conduct their seedy little business.
They're crazy.
And for those of you who might not know, in the original Ravnica block, there was this thing that they were throwing around in the flavor, this idea that the people of Ravnica did not believe that the Dimir actually existed. They thought that there were 9 guilds instead of 10, and that the Dimir were just kind of a myth, when in all reality, they were actually a guild.
Also what it says in the novels, if you ever want to read them.
Yes, and if you want to go back and read the novels, that's also true. So the flavor text says, in a space where there is no room, in a structure that was never built, meets the guild that doesn't exist. And I just, first of all, this is a triplet that is just done beautifully, which I love to see in any Magic flavor text. But what I really like about this is the way that it just sounds like a bunch of rumors, which just perfectly encapsulates that idea that it's like a bunch of people walking through the streets of Ravnica just whispering about like this myth of a guild that in their mind really doesn't exist, when in all actuality it does.
They totally do. I got you. All right. I love that. I love the triplets. I have one a little shorter. And I picked as a flavorful gem is Remember the Fallen, the card from New Phyrexia. And it says, when the Mirans had fallen, planeswalkers carried the burden of remembrance. And I remember writing this flavor text. I actually did this one.
Did you write this one?
I actually wrote this one. This is a terrible ego thing to do, but I figured it fitting because the
You're
only time we're going to talk
jerk.
About
such a jerk.
Such a be that guy. But the reason I mentioned it is one that just happened, and we just got the art for Deicide last year for a Theros block, and you're like, oh crap, Xenoclus dies. That sucks. And we now know the entire buildup is already gone. And Remember the Fallen, the flavor of the card is that there is this, the Mirans lose.
Right.
And we had a buildup in Mirrodin Besiege, you know, who's going to win, whatever, Mirrodin Pyr. And when writing this, I saw this card in War Report. And War Report basically said, yeah, they're done, they lost. But in this, I saw the artwork, and I said, okay, Elspeth is remembering her dead friend. And really, there is an analogy there of her remembering everything about Mirrodin. Because what happens when Phyrexians win, ain't no one going to know this.
Right.
Because Koth is going to stay. He's not going anywhere.
Right.
So someone needs to maintain this history. And there was a really interesting, fun opportunity to really tie those things in together. In my mind, I don't know why they picked it. I mean, maybe I was the only one to submit. Not sure. But those summation flavor texts that give you the entire story in two or three lines. I love those because then the art doesn't have to do as much work.
Right.
The fave flavor can do the work for the art. And then the art can just be a little more open-ended. It doesn't have to do 15 things for you. And I love seeing those flavor texts. And really, when flavor texts do that, I absolutely love that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a great idea, too, because when you really think about it, the Phyrexians, for the most part, totally took over that plane. So in all actuality, I mean, if somebody who hadn't been there before would visit New Phyrexia, they would have no idea that it used to be Mirrodin. They would just see it and they'd be like, oh, this is a crazy Phyrexian plane, and then they would leave. But it's those planeswalkers who used to be there and saw what happened. They're the ones who, it's kind of like their responsibility to make sure that, you know, people know what happened.
Yeah, I'd like to think that some Vorthos writers have to do this too. Obviously, as new people always come into the game, that not everyone reads the novels. There's a lot of them. I know a couple people that are working their way through it right now, and honestly, there's a lot of references they tie in from older sets, and no one realizes it.
Give me an example. What's a good example?
Well, you mentioned Cold Golem the other week.
Okay.
If you didn't play then or knew about that art, you would never understand that there's a connection there.
Oh, right. Exactly. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
And there are countless examples in the storyline of doing this. And you know, we should have a cast on that, run references. But anyway, let's get into it this week.
I mean, that's good. That's the good way to do nostalgia, though, right? Because they learned that in Time Spiral, when it was too crazy, then the new players, they felt like they were kind of being left out. But when they drop these little Easter eggs here and there for the enfranchised player who's been in the game since 1993, 94, following the story since, you know, our boy Urza was blowing up stuff.
Right.
They kind of, they're doing that on purpose, I would assume, right? Because they're just kind of throwing it out. They're saying like, hey, we know that, you know, we acknowledge that there are some players out there who are still, you know, in the game and have been it following the story for like years.
We got to find out who the creative member is that like loves sneaking in Easter eggs. I don't know who it is, but there's got to be one of those. One of them is doing that already. So today, names and flavor text. Ant, what does that mean? Why do we even have names and flavor text? Why does that even freaking matter?
Well, to quote Kavada, it's because there's space on the card, right?
Okay.
Starting with names, right? Like the name is probably the most important thing on the card, because the one rule, the golden rule of Magic, is that there cannot be two cards that have the same English name. Plain and simple, that's the rule. And you know, it's how we reference the card. It's how other cards might want to reference the card. It's how rules refer to the card. Like, it is the defining piece of the card, and it's so important to make sure that, you know, when a name is being chosen for whatever card, that, you know, it's something that is going to be evocative of what the card is. It's got to be easily, you know, referenced, something that people can remember, something pronounceable. Like there are so many things that really go into what a good name is. For a great example, Thundermaw Hellkite. That's a great name for a dragon.
Right. Good name.
Now, you wouldn't name like a little goblin Thundermaw Hellkite, right? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. When people when they say Thundermaw Hellkite, you immediately know what the card is, right? And that's the exact purpose of a name. Like, that's a great name. You got to be able to reference these things on coverage, articles, you name it.
Okay, so I got something for you that I'm going to test with you. Do you think there is a magic number of years that you can have similar names? For example, Forked Lightning, my boy, 4-drop, sorcery, 4 damage, in 1, 2, or 3 creatures, portal card, back in the day. And then we came up with Forked Bolt in Rise of the Eldrazi, which costs 1 and it deals 2 damage for the same thing. But Forked Bolt and Forked Lightning are never confused, ever. But they mean really the same thing. Lightning Bolt, Forked.
So I know that, and this was a while ago, there was an article that was, I think Mark Rosewater wrote it. I'm not sure if that's correct or not. I would have to check. But there was an article, this is years back, where they talked about when they would go through their naming, one of the things that they would mechanics, and they would try to give cards that had similar mechanics, similar name structures, so that it made it easier for you to remember what the card did, because there are so many cards out there, right? So if you saw a forked bolt or forked lightning, you might automatically just think to yourself, I bet this is a damage spell that splits its damage among targets. Without even looking at the card or anything, you know, like just that name, forked lightning, you're like, oh, I bet it's a lightning bolt that splits apart, right? So there's definitely a method to that madness, I would assume. But I do know that one of the things that they try to do is they try to keep similar named cards. They try to keep that from happening in, I believe, standard. So I don't, what they wouldn't do, I don't think, is have, like, let's say in Theros, have a card called Forked Bolt, and then in Tarkir, have a card that's called Forked Lightning.
Understandable. Right. That makes sense. I get you. Okay, so that makes sense on a naming convention. And obviously there's other examples like Blessed something. You're like, oh, cool, gain life. You know, it immediately is resonant. Anything dealing with spiders, webby stuff, you're like, oh, it's going to kill a creature with flying.
Or, it'll probably have reach.
Or it's going to give me reach or something.
Right.
I get you. I feel exactly. It. Okay, so then what about flavor? So not every card has flavor text.
So flavor text is different, right? Because when you reprint a card, right, you can't change the name, but you can change the flavor text.
Right.
So that affords you the opportunity to allow your flavor text to be more setting specific. And that's probably one of the reasons why they utilize that text as much as they possibly can to develop and portray the current story as much as they can.
Like Shabber, for example.
Yes, or Naturalize just came out in Cons of Tarkir, right?
Yep. I still don't know why destroying target card effect or enchantment is a dragon skull, but, you know, whatever. We'll find out soon.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe the skull was some kind of artifact or thing. Oh, I don't know.
Who knows? Enchantment dragon. Luck dragon. Falcor.
Yeah, maybe. But that's another thing with names, though, too. Like, you can be very setting specific, but then that card can't be reprinted unless you're on that. Like, any card that has a name that has Abzan in it, right?
Right.
That's now bound to Tarkir. Or Land of War Elves is a great example. Like, that's stuck to Dominaria, right? But Elvish Mystic, that can go anywhere.
I wonder how many of those that they have printed, and they're like, son of a, I wish we would have known back in 97, you know?
But they've shown that they're okay with creating a functional reprint, you know,
right.
Which is totally fine. But what I'm really happy that they're doing is, like, they're going the route of, like, okay, you know, we used to have Llanowar Elves, now we're going to have Elvish Mystic,
right?
We're going to pick a name that we can utilize on multiple planes. We're not just going to reprint Llanowar Elves, but call it, like, Tarkir Mystic, you know, like... Huh. They're at least going more generic with the cards that they know, like, okay, we're going to want to reprint this again.
Right. That makes sense. Okay. So obviously reprints, you got to change the flavor. Sometimes they take away flavor text, like in Rancor, which is, you know, I'm still a little grumbly about, I won't lie. I'm a little grumbly about it. All of a sudden, back in the day, has arguably one of the best flavor texts ever written. Hatred outlives the hateful, which is exactly what the card does. You're just like, I don't know. But they probably had at least 30 gold stars that day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but it's tough, right? It was reprinted in what? It was a core set, right?
Magic. Well, it was reprinted in Plane when Arch Enemy, and everyone was like, wow, it's back! Yay! And then it got reprinted a couple more times in some supplemental stuff. And then it came back in Magic 2013, which was pretty great.
Right. That's right. I mean, flavor does all kinds of stuff, right? It
weaves, maybe?
More, it does. It really does. But more or less lately, like the flavor is really driving the story. Like, especially now that we don't, like you said, we don't have novels anymore, right? So what we get is what they put out on Uncharted Realms, right? And what we get in the card.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes use the planeswalkers, sometimes.
In any given large set, though, we get how many cards? Like 250 to 300 cards. In a small set, we'll get like maybe 200 cards. And not every one of those is going to be able to have flavor text. Like, some of them are going to be really wordy. So they really are trying to utilize like as much space as they can to just squeeze in like every little nook and cranny about, like, you know, little tidbits about the plane or the storyline, or just like trying to get us as much details as possible.
They're going to probably put like flavor on Basic Lands pretty soon. That'd be great.
That would be amazing.
Wouldn't that be cool?
I would love that. I would love that's a full, I mean, that's the only way that you can get a full 8 lines other than a vanilla creature.
Can you imagine on that? Oh, biscuits. Like, you know, Kamigawa would have had like some weird things going on with it, and there's 4 of them, and you can have like star.
Yeah, there you could do exactly. You would have what, 4 times? You would have 20 cards.
Oh, man.
8 lines each. Like max, that would be your max, obviously.
That's
what would be really funny is if they printed like a mountain and they had a one liner.
I'd like that. Oh, that'd be super.
Like, fire is good, and that's all they put. Like, quote it to a goblin or something.
Or just like an island that just says nah.
Yeah. Just, nope.
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 Big pile of nope. All right. So obviously, there's some rules that come from these. I mean, flavor text is really wide open, but you have 2 or 3 lines. Sometimes you may get a couple big guys, but the 8-line full flavor, you can do basically everything. But I've been around to read a bunch of these. There are things that repeat themselves. Some sort of tropes, perhaps.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There are definitely tropes. I mean, it really depends. I mean, you can do parables or try to, you know, instill some kind of like thought in your, like really the key is when you sit down to write flavor text, you have to think like, what do I want you to get out of it? Right? Because you don't want to just write some couple lines of just like text where someone's going to read it and just go, okay, yeah, whatever. Right? Like, you want to instill some kind of like thought or some kind of reason, like reward basically for the person who spent the time to read it.
Mm.
Like, they want to come away from it feeling like, okay, that was worth my time. You know, some things like the parables from Karn, for example, from like Tempest Block, right? Like, each one of those made you walk away thinking, you know, a little differently. Like, there's one, I'm doing these off the top of my head, but it's something like he's talking about like a woman who has a silver egg,
right.
And she breaks it open to see like what gems might be inside, and all she finds is a yolk.
Are you talking bottle gnomes?
Yes, bottle gnomes.
You talk about boy bottle gnomes? Oh, yes. I even got it pulled up. What is it? I am reminded of the fable of the silver egg.
There it is.
Its owner cracks it open to see what jewels it holds, only to discover a simple yellow yolk.
Perfect.
Golden,
right?
Karn, silver golem, or boy.
Right. Hey, I did that pretty good off the top of my head.
You really did? That wasn't bad.
Yeah, you got your art. I got my flavor.
No,
but anyway, so that's beautifully written. And it makes you sit there and think like, oh man, like that's whoever that person was, they were totally being greedy, and that's what you get for being greedy.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
Like that's just one example of a, you know, I'll call it a trope, where you're just trying to make your person think. You know, another one would be like a snarky one liner. Goblins and Jaya are riddled with these, right?
So Jaya.
And with those, what do you, your goal is probably to make them laugh.
She didn't,
right?
Like most things.
You just want to get them to chuckle. Right, maybe get them to have a little fun, smile while they're playing. Some of them are more like, I think it's on Time Stop.
Right.
Like someone one day will best me, but it won't be today, and it won't be you. Like things that when you play the card, you can say it to your opponent with like a smirk on your face. You know, like that's also it's bringing out an emotion in you, in the player. And it's like you read it and you're like, oh man, that's awesome. I can't wait to say that to Sean at Friday Night Magic. Like, I'm gonna play this card and I'm just gonna rub his nose in it by reading the flavor text to him.
Isn't that the word? Isn't that the card last word?
Or last word.
I think Time Stop is the end the turn one.
Yeah. Yeah, end the turn immediately. And it has like the girl and she's split in half and she's holding like a bird and an egg.
Yeah. Last word is one of those.
Right. It is last word.
You know it. All right, so what else? So we got a snarky wizard, parable. What else? What else we got?
So another one that they would do is like children's rhymes, right?
Okay.
Where they would do something like on Phyrexian Hulk, where it says, it doesn't think, it doesn't feel, it doesn't laugh or cry. All it does from dusk till dawn is make the soldiers die. right? So this is something that's quoted as an Onian children's rhyme. Mm. So those type of tropes is kind of like, it's literature that's based within the world. So it's kind of drawn, that's more like an immersion thing, where it's making you think that these worlds are living and breathing, and that there are actually children who deal with these Phyrexian monsters on such a daily basis that they've developed kids' rhymes about these things. Like, it really kind of develops that world and develops that story.
So I'm going to one-up you right now and do that. I'm going to totally, totally windmill slam you with Chubtoad. Arguably the best children's rhyme. Chubtoad, at the door, run away quick, or you'll run no more. I mean, it's just classic Ice Age, baby.
That's the traditional children's rhyme.
Like, that's
right?
Just A plus all around.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But I do love Chubtoad.
Oh. I love it.
And that art too, right? With the hand just poking out of his mouth.
Just do a toad, make it weird, put a hand in the mouth, don't cut it, ship it. Okay, so parable, children's rhymes, snarky wizard. What about something like a deeper look into the world? Occasionally we see some of that stuff.
Yes. So that one would be Alabaster Kieran, I think. Yeah, Alabaster Kieran, right? So that flavor text, the appearance of a Kieran signifies the passing or arrival of an important figure. As word of sighting spread, all the Khans took it to mean themselves, but only the shaman Kaitanol thought of Sarkhan Vol. So that one, there's no kind of like, it's not a kid's rhyme, it's not comedy, it's not snarky. It's literally building flavor. Like, you read this and it's just like, whoa, that's an incredible nugget about Tarkir that, like, I didn't know before. You know, like, you walk away from that feeling like you understand the world better.
It just sounds like it's something fit on the style guide. All right, so world building, that makes sense too. I always like/hate the groaners. Cripes, you know, those ones. Portals.
Festival of Troken.
Oh, God, Festival of Troken. Oh, man, that card. Like, the art is just, you know, let's just do a bizarre flavor text. Everyone loves a good sale. It's like, really? Okay. Sweet. You know? Just, oh, all right. God. I know some people like those when they're just super cheesy.
I mean, some do. And that's like, I mean, it's, you got to write flavor a little bit for everybody, right? It's better to have something that a little piece of the community loves and everyone else hates than have a whole bunch of stuff written down that nobody really cares about and doesn't want to read.
Isn't that a thing, though? You'd rather have someone get fired up and angry than to have someone just indifferent?
Absolutely. Apathy is the worst, especially like in relationships. That's what people say all the time. Like, they would rather have someone hate them than have someone not even care if they're there. It's way worse.
That's like the best insult you can give. It's like, don't you really dislike, don't you really hate me after that? No, I don't love you or hate you.
I just don't care. Like,
you literally do not even register for me. It's so aggressively hateful. Yeah. To say someone, you're not even important enough for me to think about.
Right. It's terrible.
It's just like,
oh. Which is the last thing that any writer would want someone to feel after reading what they wrote.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, no, you don't want anyone to read it and just go, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah, that'd be bad. That'd be bad. Or just did not even see it at all. They're like, oh, it looked dumb.
Yeah,
like,
I made it halfway through and was like, whatever.
super grumble.
One thing that that they used to do back in the day and not as much of is real world text.
Oh.
Like quoting poems or quoting Shakespeare.
Yep.
One of my absolute favorites of all time, and a card that, like, as a kid I would just sit up and read, like really one that got me into the, like, really into the game as a kid, was Skaith Zombies.
Oh yeah, sure.
It's so good. I have to read it. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Do what you gotta do.
They groaned, they stirred, they all uprose, nor spake, nor moved their eyes. It had been strange, even in a dream, to have seen those dead men rise.
So good.
Like, that's beautiful. And dude, it's a common zombie. It's a vanilla zombie. It's a 2/2 for 3.
You're gonna draft that all day back.
That's the beauty of flavor text. That's the beauty, is that you can take a card that 99.9% of the population of the magic community would just look at it and go, oh, it's 2-2 for 3, whatever, right? But you slap some amazing flavor on there, and now you have people who they're like, I need to collect skate zombies because this flavor is so amazing. Or they go to build their commander deck and they shove it in their decks because they just love the flavor so much. Like, they don't care. Like, the idea of, oh, it's a 2-2 zombie for 3, that doesn't matter anymore. So I don't care. I don't care about that. What I care about is that when I play this, I'm going to get to read it, and I'm going to get, you know, this overwhelming wave of nostalgia, and it's going to be awesome for me. And then, yeah, you can shock it, whatever, fork bolt it. I don't care. But I've already gotten my enjoyment out of it, so it doesn't matter.
And Skate Zombies, if you've done your research, is the one of the few cards that flavor text has been consistent from every printing except for one. In any sort of those starter decks, some of the flavor changes. And in Skate Zombies' example, it's the starter 1999. It's just a two-liner. It's, luckily for them, it doesn't take much brains to slaughter and maim. I mean, otherwise, all the way through from Alpha to 10th edition, boom, same flavor text. That's incredible for something to last for 20 years.
Because it's one of the, like, how do you look at that and go, oh, I could write something better. Like, I can do better than that. Right. Like, that's, and then once you get that momentum going, it's kind of hard to, it's like, well, we haven't changed this in 7 years. Like, are we going to do it now? Like, should we do it now?
Right.
And it's popular. Like, it's a popular one. So it's like, are we going to upset more people than make them happy? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there are so many different things that go into that.
What's even stranger is if you actually look in different languages, for a lot of the older flavor text, they just took the English version and put it in there, or they translated it word for word.
Oh, I've never actually looked at that. Because, like, those are the harder, like, when it's a poem like that, or if it's something that's, like, rhyming or using a phrase or like, you know, something that would only make sense in English. Like, that becomes very difficult to translate. And that's something that, like, as a writer now, like today, that I try to keep in mind when I'm writing, you know, for the sets that I'm working on. Like, this is going to be printed in, you know, over 10 languages, right? So I need to be conscious of that. Like, I have to make sure, like, you know, am I writing something here that's going to be, you know, absolutely abysmal to translate?
But that actually, in localization, they sometimes change it. Not all the flavor text is identical, and if they have any sort of insight that they can give into rhyming they could do, or it ties to a grim fairy tale in Germany, they're going to do it. And you know what? Us Americans will never know how much deeper it is for their experience than ours.
Ooh, that's – you know what? I would be interested – I would be really interested to see, like, what – flavor texts out there were changed like that, right? And like what and kind of like what they that's really interesting, because I would never know if it was tied to like a very localized tale in you know, Korean or something. Like, I don't know, I can't read Korean, and even if I could read it, I wouldn't know the reference to like an old myth, because I just probably haven't even ever heard the story before.
Right. I mean, we know biblical stories in Western culture, sure. Korin isn't that much different, but like the Ramayana in India, what if, I don't know, our Russian localization team says, hey, you know what? We're going to get some other crazy stuff involved too. We're going to use Russian folk tales out of Kazakhstan. I'm never going to know that. But that would be incredible arcana on the Mothership site.
Yeah, that would be really – I mean, I have no idea if or how that happens. But that would be really – I would love to read about that. That's like really interesting.
Okay, well, that'd be my jam. So getting back to topic, we got Snarky Wizard, Parable, Children's Rhymes, one-liners that are cheesy or great, whatever. The real world. Some sort of world building background.
Well, one thing that I'm really interested in finding out more about it, and this is something that Mark Rosewater touched on really, really briefly, is the idea that the Vorthos psychographic it's not its own thing, that it's actually just a version of Timmy Johnny Spike.
So it's not a psychographic then?
Right. It's more like an axis, right?
We've mentioned this in past articles that Timmy, Johnny, Spike are more like on an XY axis, so they're flat. Right. And
Vorthos Melvin is like the Z.
Is like a Z axis, so it's like depth. How much rules do you like? How much you taste do you like? I like the taste personally. And I think right. Melvin sucks. But that's me.
But what I found interesting is that, like, when he talked about it briefly, right? He was saying that, like, so when you have a spike in Magic, what do they care about? They care about winning, right? And they want to be the best at the game
all day.
So when you have a spike in Flavor, what he was saying is that, like, that mentality are the people who want to know every little detail about the history of each setting, right? So, for example, Khans of Tarkir, right? Let's say somebody who wanted to know every detail about each Khan, what they said, when they said it, who they said it to, like they're competitive in that way. So that if they ever walked into a room and a bunch of people were talking about the flavor of Khans of Tarkir, they could say, oh, no, you're wrong there. I know this is what happened here. And, oh, I can clear that up because this on this card said this and that or the other thing. Like they just have it down. Right.
They want to correct people all day.
Right. That's the spike mentality. But what he didn't go into that I'm remembering is I don't think he touched on how that would be for Timmy and Johnny. And that's something that I'm really interested in that I really, really want him to write that article. It's been forever. And I know it's probably not like priority.
Well, I can talk to you. We can speak about it right now. Okay. Timmy Vorthos. Well, what does that mean? Timmy likes the windmill slam. Big old monster, big old dragon. Well, what does he want?
So what do we know? We know that Timmy wants to have fun, right? Yeah. That's the idea of a Timmy is they want to have a good time. They want to have fun. So how do you have fun with Flavor? By playing a counterspell that has a snarky one-liner on it, right? And quoting the card. Like, that's fun, right? Or reading something goofy, like some flavor text on a goblin, like, inflate the toad, right? And being able to quote that. Like, that, to me, is how I would classify a Timmy.
I do like Goblin Blue Balloon Brigade. That's a great card.
Oh, it is. It's fantastic.
Just inflate the toad. All right, so Timmy, that makes sense to me. You know, he wants to have something visceral and funsies. Great. Like, he probably mentioned the flavor text as he plays the card instead of, like, do you have a counter spell? Well, I got a big pile of nope, and that's, like, the flavor text, and you're like, ah, biscuits.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That to me is Timmy. But I think the hardest one is Johnny. I think Johnny is a tough one, right? Because what a Johnny wants to express himself, and they do that by creative deck build, right? Most of the time. Or they take a card like one with nothing where it just says like, oh, discard your hand. And everyone else is like, why the hell would I ever use that card? But Johnny sees it as a challenge and they're like, I'm going to build a deck where that card is the best card in the deck. Right? Like, they just, that challenge of deck building is what they enjoy. Whether or not the deck is good, they're like, ah, whatever. They're on to the next challenge.
Okay, so how does that do relate to Flavor then?
So, you know, I've thought about this probably too much for my own good. But in my opinion, I think that Johnny, when you really get down to it, they just want to be intellectually stimulated. And so they like flavor text that, like, we were talking about before, that maybe that has a hidden Easter egg in it.
Okay.
So like Stalking Tiger, where it says coal golems, right? They want to be able to look at that and go, oh, I see what they're doing there. Like, I get it, right? Or maybe parables, because the parables make them think, right? But even going beyond that, a card like Flight of Fancy from Ravnica, it's an enchant creature. When it comes into play, you draw two cards, right? And in the flavor text, it says the view from above is an inspiration to the newly winged. But the word inspiration is hinting at the fact that the card inspiration lets you draw two cards. So that line of thinking, I think, is rewarding to a Johnny. Not a Johnny the Planeswalker, a Johnny.
Bingo, bango. Because there's no reason to win at it other than this self-fulfillment from having this knowledge. For example, War Report, to be like, ah, this is a seminal moment in the storyline, and this card shows the last moment before the Mirrens passed away.
Right. Or even your flavor gem. where you say, you know, the Mirans have fallen. Planeswalkers carried the burden of remembrance. And you have to sit there and think, why is that true? And then when you start piecing it together, you're like, oh, my God, because if anyone else ever came back to the plane, they would have no idea that a war took place.
Right.
It's not like there's a Planeswalker newsletter that goes out to all the other Planeswalkers and says, like, oh, in today's news, the Phyrexians took over Mirrodin. Ha ha. Like, nobody would ever know.
It's like the Ravnica like Sentinel. It's a newspaper.
Right. Planeswalker Digest.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. They read it for the articles.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, when you're writing, you have to think about what you're trying to get out of your audience. Do you want them to think? Do you want them to laugh? Do you want them to be scared? Do you want them to get upset? Whatever, right? But then you also have to think, how am I going to approach it? Do I want to approach it from a Spike mentality? Like, do I want it to be just facts about the setting? Do I want it to be something that Timmy would enjoy?
Right. So that happened with each time. So me looking at this and saying, well, you know, I look at flavor, but flavor's number two. I'm going to look at the picture because I like pictures.
Right.
Does those things inform each other or not?
They can and they can't. I mean,
is that not a trope in and of itself too? That it either has to match the picture and the name, or it doesn't.
Well, I mean, you kind of have to play. You have to play to the strengths of the card, right? If you have Thundermaul Hellkite, you look at the art and you have this crazy dragon ripping through the sky with lightning everywhere. Like, do you think that is a good opportunity to put a flavor text that builds the setting of the world, or one that makes you sit there and think? Or should it just be something that just kind of you read it and it's like, this is going to smash my face in?
Does it even need a flavor text in that case?
It most likely doesn't. I mean, maybe it doesn't, right? But when you got to look at the card and think, like, what fits here the best?
Right.
Like, I wouldn't submit for that card. I wouldn't try to submit some, like, heady sentence that made you sit back and wonder, like, about the ethics of the common Hellkite and blah blah blah. Like, it wouldn't fit. It wouldn't make any sense. It'd be the wrong voice. But what I could submit would be something like goblins just like running for the hills, like screaming about, like, oh, the lightning, like, oh my God, you know what I mean? Like, that would make more sense.
Yeah, you could talk about like the speed or something of, oh, everything's dead before, like, or a fairy talking, like, everything's dead before you even realize it. All right, well, that's interesting to me, at least. So what I would be curious about in the future is, say there was a spoiler that came out that just had a flavor text.
That's all you need. What do you mean?
Well, say instead of...
that's all I care about. When they spoil the cards, I just read the name, I look at the art, I check and see if there's flavor text. If there is, I read it, and then I move on. I don't care.
That's funny. So,
I don't care. My commander decks are so wacky because none of the mechanics match. It's just like, I don't care. The flavor's good. I just play it.
It just doesn't even matter. Because, I mean, that's one of the first things I want to look at to get a deep look. And we always get the full card. Only, right. I mean, there's been a couple times where they've given us only pieces. I mean, there was the big Jace the Mind Sculptor, find the puzzle pieces, put them together thing. No flavor.
When they did Pelucranos, I think they just gave us the art and the name, I think. Right?
Yeah. And then it was like, oh, what's this situation?
Yeah.
But I haven't really seen that where people would be like, you know, I would love to get a flavor text at a time. And maybe there's six lines, and each one describes one thing, and this would be the remember the fallen of the set. Say there's – okay, so we're going into Evermore Magical Christmas time now. Say Deicide wasn't spoiled as a full card. What if it was Deicide?
Okay.
And you got nothing else in the card, no art, no cost, no type. No mechanic. It just said, DSI, it is done. What does that work for you at?
I mean, that would be enough, I think.
Could you pick up from Journey to Nyx, third set, and see DSI, it is done? Could you figure out what the card did? Just for a spoiler. Like, I would go with just that.
Probably.
And that would be for the flavorful Vorthos out there, the Spike Vorthos, to say, I'm going to try to find a reference to fit this. I'm going to see the Johnny back and the jockey.
That would actually be really cool, because like one of the things that they do in spoilers, like I mean, a great example is Polukranos, right? Because they showed us the name and the art, and everyone started freaking out, and they're like, "Oh, does this like confirm Greek set, whatever?" Yeah. Like, because that came out before. Or no, did we already know it was Theros? Because
it was a dual decks, is where we
Right, it was in a dual deck. I don't think we knew for sure yet, or maybe we did. But it doesn't matter. They knew. They're like, oh, it's a Hydra. What are mechanics that make sense for Hydra? Blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I think maybe one of the really cool things that they could do is like when they do the articles online.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of times they'll show us the art, and if the card hasn't been spoiled yet, they won't put the name of the card.
Yeah.
Under, like, whenever there's art on the mothership, right? They'll put the name of the card underneath the art if we already know what the card is.
Right.
But a lot of times in the spoilers season, they'll have art, but they won't have a name, right?
Art by Izzy. Bingo.
Right. What they could do is they could put the name in the, or maybe put the flavor text.
Ooh.
In the article like that, you know what I mean? Like, instead of giving us the card, just give us the art and the flavor. And then, yeah, like maybe some people who are like really into like the spiky flavor text could be like, all right, I'm going to read this and try to see if I could figure out what the mechanics might be.
Speculation season is nice.
Yeah, that would be cool. I don't think that they've ever done that before.
Write that down.
I'll do you one better. I'll record it.
Okay, well, record it. I'm going to write a letter. Send it in.
Note to self.
Note to self. Write it down. Send a letter.
Well, yeah, that. Okay. Yeah, I would. I mean, I would really enjoy that. Because, yeah, like going back to what you said, if they put up the art for Deicide and they had the article in there, you know, talking about like how that went down and Elspeth went up in Uncharted Realms and she did her thing and Xenikos lost his hand and all that garbage, right?
Yep.
All that happened. And let's say they didn't spoil a card. They just had that art. And underneath it, they put the flavor text, it is done. And that was it, you know. And then maybe the card would get spoiled, like, later that day on Twitter or something.
Ooh, that'd be nice.
But they gave you, I don't know, like, maybe 8 hours to try and figure it out.
Just hand-wringing. Oh, man.
Yeah, that would be cool. Kind of like when Rosewater, for one of his con spoilers, he sent it out in like choppy text or something. It was like all capital letters. It was like a puzzle, right? And then you like see who could figure it out. They could do something like that too. Like if one of you tweets the right card, then we'll spoil it.
That sounds like Vorthos puzzle.
Yeah, a Vorthos puzzle. Yeah, that's exactly what it would be.
I like that.
That would be awesome.
That would be awesome. I like that. we need to petition someone. That sounds incredible.
Yeah.
All right, well, this has been fun. I learned some things about flavor writing, a little more than I did, other than I think it helps the art.
Right. It makes the card look pretty.
It helps things. Well, cool.
I mean, I love the flavor text. I've loved it ever since I was a kid. Like, when I first got Magic cards, I had no idea what any of the mechanics meant. Like, for all I – it could have been written in a totally different language. Like, I had no idea. I didn't know how to play the game. I didn't have any friends that played the game. But what drew me in and what initially got me just collecting them the same way I would have collected, like, baseball cards or something, is I would read the name, I would look at the art, and I would read the flavor text. And it was just like getting a comic book.
That's so weird. It is. So weird.
In retrospect, it is, but for years, that's how I enjoyed Magic. Like, I enjoyed Magic the same way that like the same way that kids run down to a comic book store and they buy the next comic book. I would run down to my nearest card store, I would buy Magic cards, and I would read the flavor text like I was reading a book.
Right. That's just so weird. I love it because it's so different, but. Ah, that's strange. Super strange. All right, that's all I got on this because I'm the art guy. I'm literally like dying here, and I'm like, oh, so many words, cripes.
It's like me. I'm like, God, so many colors.
Struggle is so real.
Too many brush strokes.
Too many. I don't understand. Is it digital or not digital? Is it digital?
Is it a sketch, and then they did digital, and then they did oil, and then they did digital touch-ups? Like, I don't know. It's too many things.
Is that colored pencil?
Too many things. And now they're doing art where, like, there's two different versions of the card, and some of them have Ugin in them, and some of them don't. And I'm just like, how did they do that? I don't even understand. Is that paint? Did they paint it twice? Are they that good? Did they use mirrors? Like, I have no idea. Ridiculous. I don't know.
That's incredible. All right, well, I'm out for the day. I'm Orthos Mike. You can find me on the Twitter, same name. I'm right for Gathering Magic. I read all about that flavor and that arc. And then with me, as always, is Ant Tezator. Where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter at AntMTG, and I also have an article every week on Gathering Magic, so you can check me out there as well. And that's really it, Mike.
That's all I got, too. I'm done for the day. We got some big news from the cast coming up. Can't tell you about it yet, but it's going to get absurd in the next few weeks here, and you guys will see why. So stay tuned. Thanks for watching.